Welcome to the Spirit-Led Podcast, your guide on a journey to full enlightenment in this beautiful life. I'm your host, Joan Hope Craig. Each episode, we explore spiritual wisdom, life's purpose, and the profound impact of daily choices on our personal growth and the world. Well, let's take a couple deep breaths. Get centered. In our own way, let's go within, becoming aware of our true essence. Recognizing that true essence in each other and in everyone who may end up listening to this. And here in my heart, we honor the Kriya Yoga Guru lineage, Mahavatar Babaji, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda, Roy Eugene Davis, and their successors. Honoring all enlightenment traditions, all teachers and teachings. Richard, is there anything that you want to say out loud to help you be prepared?
Yeah, absolutely. Within the silence is all the wisdom, is all the knowledge, is all the love that we could ever desire. And when two or more are gathered in the possibility of these things being present, they're already there. And so once again, Richard and Joan have found each other at the level of oneness, the level of peace. And with a united breath, consciousness, and heart, we are of one accord for God to be revealed in the most magnificent ways through us, around us, within us, but most especially as us. And so we say thank you, infinite presence doing business at this moment in time. This is a brief moment in space, knowing it is God ordained, God manifested, God directed, and God blessed. We simply allow ourselves to be used for the highest purpose here. And for that high purpose, we say thank you. Thank you, God. Amen.
Amen. Well said. Thank you. Well, I'd love to introduce you, Richard, to our audience. So I think we'll dive right in. We're so happy to have you today. Richard, Reverend Richard Burdick is the senior minister at Unity North Atlanta Church, and he has many years of experience growing and nurturing spiritual communities. And from my understanding, a special focus on the unity between faiths and denominations and between all people. He's an ordained and licensed unity and interfaith minister who completed extensive studies in religious science and participated in the New Thought movement. He's a teacher, a musician, a husband, a father and grandfather. I think seven kids and 17 grandkids. We might hear about them. And we've invited Richard to speak with us about his life and his ministry, and especially about being spirit-led. So welcome.
Oh, I'm so delighted to be here, Joan. Thank you so much for the invitation and the opportunity to connect.
Yeah. Well, since a lot of our listeners, not all, but a lot of them are Kriya yogis, could you just share a little bit about how you even came to, how we came to meet, and how you knew about Center for Spiritual Awareness and Kriya? Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I like to teach that everything is a divine appointment in your life, and people show up in your life at the right place at the right time for the right experience that you need, that your soul needs, your heart needs, your spirit needs. And Ron Lindum, Reverend Ron Lindum, used to come to our interfaith, our New Thought ministers gathering here in Atlanta, and he always would bring the wonderful publication from CSA and share, always would share a little bit of inspiration from a particular passage. And what he would read really tickled my fancy, my heart, my curiosity. And so I just decided at one point, after several years of really enjoying the wisdom that was being shared in those meetings by Ron, to make a journey up there. And I happened to know two friends in my church, two congregants in my church, that said, well, we know the area very well. We'll go up there together and we'll introduce you to Roy Eugene Davis. His reputation preceded him. You know, he was a larger than life human being, but softer than life as well. And it was such an opportunity that I jumped at it. One, to get to the mountains, but two, to get to meet the man and the wisdom that was behind these words that I had experienced for so long. And certainly to, being maybe a little bit of a cynic myself, well, let's see if what Ron's been telling me is absolutely true. And it was. It was a very brief meeting. I found the grounds the minute I walked onto the property at CSA up in Lakemont. A sense of peace, a really deep sense of peace. And I knew something profound was going on here in this work. And then it was just a brief introduction, to Roy. And that which I felt on the grounds, I felt in his presence times 100. It was obvious that there was a great lessons to be learned from his teachings. But his presence was as much a teacher in that moment for me as anything. I consider myself a bit of an empath, and I'm very sensitive to my environments. And that was an environment that said, wow, there's beauty here. And using my language, there's God there. There's God here, not necessarily, particularized as one man, but as a work. And so that meeting caused me to go up many months later again and just spend some more time on the grounds and once again have a conversation with Roy. And it was the same profound experience. And so I'm forever blessed for the opportunity to be in his presence before he passed and to be in the presence of what he had created up there in Lakemont.
Thank you for sharing that. I think the listeners who've been to CSA can relate. I certainly, when I go there, it's like, oh, my body, mind, and spirit sigh a relief of, oh, I'm in a safe, comfortable, peaceful, quiet, beautiful place. And
I am a seeker of those places, and so my antennae is always up, and so I'm ready and receptive when I feel those people come into my field and I feel those vortexes, if you will, on earth by right of consciousness. I'm immediately transported to a deeper place of my own understanding of myself and my connection to the world.
Well, I'm so tickled to have you here, because when we had just our brief conversation to say hello and see if you might want to be a guest, you said, oh, the title of the podcast is Spirit Led. That's how I feel I've lived my life. So I really want to just make a real open question to you of what Spirit Led has meant to you and how it showed up in your life.
Well, I would love to say that it was an easy process, but I kind of sometimes laugh at myself that I was kicking and screaming down the path of transformation a little bit. I led a good portion of my life. I come from a long line of people that were human-led. Maybe you could call it ego-led. And I saw the frustration and the walls that end up happening when you are trying to lead solely from your own personality, from your own limited resources. Spirit-led, you started for me in my journey, long before I was a minister, stepping into a religious science church, Science of Mind, with Ernest Holmes. And what I saw was a group of people that weren't struggling nearly as much as I was in trying to get ahead in the world, in trying to make my way or leave my legacy. They weren't struggling. In fact, there was a great amount of joy in this particular community in Santa Cruz, California. And I paid attention. I said, I want what they're having. I want what they're having. And I began to rely on something other than my own personality and my own ego to realize there can be a much effortless way of unfolding, of becoming and stretching. That began my journey with God, which I call spirit. I use the word light and love and life to describe God. It really matters less the word, but I began to have a relationship with the light, the life, and the love that was what we call in the Unity Movement my Christ essence, that essence of God that was particularized at the point of me. And I began to listen. And it's been a process of 62 years of listening and paying attention to deeper, more profound truths within me, as opposed to looking externally for the next opportunity, the next thing to do. It really has become, what's the next thing to be? What's the next vibration to hold? And I find that I, hopefully anyway, have become one of those people that I met in that religious science church that says, wow, there's a lot more joy in my life than there ever was before. And spirit has created opportunities without force. I like to use the idea of a river, that life is flowing to the ocean. And we're either cooperating with that river or we're fighting it. And I had spent a lot of my time fighting the current. And when I realized spirit-led was allowing the water of spirit, God, of life, to buoy me up. It's designed by law to do that. It was going to get me to my destination, my destined harbor, in a much more peaceful way. And so it's been lesson after lesson, moment after moment, and experience after experience of just waking up a little bit more to the beauty of that which exists that maybe I've been missing.
Could you say some of those lessons, maybe those moments that you found yourself, what caused you to have the awareness of, oh, what I'm doing right now is that personal human struggle, but I could go this way. What happened that helped you make those switches?
Well, you know, life will bring you to your knees, and a certain mindset will always bring you to your knees. This life essence, this God essence, and I take it out of the realm of personality, is moving in the direction of my highest good. And if you're paying attention, those who are paying attention to life will realize when I do this, it doesn't work so well. It doesn't feel so joyous. It does not feel peaceful. And then when I do this, which is contrary to the human ego, releasing, letting go, allowing, and just being, something beautiful happens without the force. And I'm not nearly as tired. I'm not nearly as worn out. And I'll be honest, the other way can create a lot of resentment. I began to drop resentments and expectations of what the way the world was supposed to show up for me. And it organically showed up. And if you pay attention, you can see, well, duh, I'm going to be smart enough to try the higher way, the better way, the smoother way. And so, yeah, I've been brought to my knees a number of times with very difficult life situations. I'm grateful for those moments of being on my knees, but more grateful for the awakening and the willingness of my guardian angels, my divine light, to stay the course when I forget. You know, it's been a process of forgetting and remembering, forgetting and remembering. And I like to say, if I can remember 51% of the time more than I forget, all right, then I'm on the right path. So it's an old Blind Boys of Alabama song that I love that says, I'm not what I ought to be, but I'm better than I used to be, and I'm getting better all the time. So it's an educational process of walking the earth and paying attention to what works and what doesn't.
I love how you said that. And as I was listening to you, I felt reassured, and I hope our listeners do too, because for me, as a recovering overachiever and perfectionist,
namaste.
I can see those moments in my life that I'm, as you said, on my knees, you know, resistance, not in a good place, you know, not feeling good. Things are hard. And I judge myself for them. Like, oh, why don't I know better by now? But it's true that those are the moments that we have the choice. Those are the moments that help us realize we need to shift, and they're sacred and part of the process. So it's reassuring when I hear from someone like you that you have those too.
Well, it's wonderful because, you know, as I study the master teachers, the way shores, and Jesus is a wonderful man that we look to in the unity movement. He struggled with these things as well. You know, if you read the scriptures, he was fully human at times, and he was fully divine at other times. And if you read the scriptures, it was his process of realizing, I'm scared, I'm afraid, I'm angry, I'm upset, but let me drop down into a higher reality, a deeper reality. And so he's, as my way shower and my elder brother, I look at his example. And maybe, you know, I can give myself a little bit of slack. It used to take me 10 years to do it, maybe 10 days. Now, maybe with my practice, my spiritual practice, I'd like to believe maybe it's 10 minutes. 10 minutes of recognition. Oh, I forgot who I was for a moment. I forgot the truth for a moment. Let me take a breath, let me remember, and then act again. And that's the wonderful thing. That's what I call grace. I can choose at any given moment to do it better, to do it differently. And yeah, you got to be careful. I have a tendency to also beat myself up. How could I forget? How could I allow that trap? It's a constant cleansing process. And each time it happens and I recognize it and I don't beat myself up, there's a little bit more opportunity for the next time to be a little bit more centered, anchored, and grounded.
That's really helpful. There's a couple things I almost want to go back to that you alluded to. When you mentioned going into kind of those first moments where you were like, oh, there's an easier way to live. You said you weren't a minister yet. Could you talk about like your path as far as when did you know that was what you wanted to be doing?
You know, I'd love to say there was this great revelation and epiphany. I'm going to be a minister. It's not. It's been more of a journey. As a young man, my experiences were pretty difficult. I was born into a set of circumstances and family structures and belief systems, as well as a physicality. I struggled with my health as a young man a lot. I struggled, and I still do a little bit to this day with anxiety. Being on this podcast right here with you is anxiety producing. I have a nervous system. And so it's been trial and error of trying to process this anxiety. A teacher once told me that I'm never going to get rid of the butterflies in my stomach, but I'm going to teach them to fly in formation. And that has stuck with me. So I still have the human tendencies that for whatever reason are my lesson here on earth, but I've taught them to fly in formation and to direct energy as opposed to life. You know, we teach about cause and effect a lot in Unity. And when I can live at the level of cause, it's been one experience, one doctor's visit, really one psychologist visit after another, where I began to realize there are people that are in my, on my, in my corner that want to help me. They want to support me. Some of them came in a doctor's office. Some of them came in a church. Some of them came in my family, but it came also from just being a curious spiritual seeker. I grew up in the Methodist Church, and I always knew there was something greater there. There was something that wanted to be revealed through me. And so as a seeker, you inevitably become a minister. And I have a servant heart. That which I have received is only my job to give it away. I believe in circles. Life is a wonderful circle. And as I have received, it is really my responsibility to then give it away. And so it was dark night of the soul after difficult experience after another, where my awakening and my lesson became the ultimate responsibility to help somebody else who was dealing with the same anxiety, the same physical difficulties, and the same blinders, if you will, to love's presence. And so I pay it forward. So I kind of fell into ministry long before there was a piece of paper on the wall. And it was just surrounding myself with people who also had a servant's heart, who wanted to make the world a better place. And that's really my mission, is that every day I go to sleep, did I make the world or one person's life a little bit better today? And if the answer is yes, I sleep well.
Thank you for sharing about your anxiety. I think that's a very, very common challenge that people are facing. We all need to heal ourselves, and then we learn a skill set that we can pass on, whether that's through music or writing or through speaking. And I was actually surprised you said you had butterflies, because I've watched you on YouTube and you have a dynamic, energetic, uplifting presence. So we'll make sure to link some of those videos for the guest if they want to see it in the notes. So it's encouraging to me that someone who comes across as very confident still has butterflies in their stomach.
Oh, I really appreciate that. You know, I try my darndest to be in the world. I'm having a human experience, and I'm not going to deny that these things are there. But following again Jesus as my number one shower of many, don't be defined by that. When I defined myself by my anxiety and my nerves and my, really, which is coming from a need to be approved of, oh, I have to be the best at something, then I'm approved of because I didn't approve of myself. When I can rise above those things, they're not bad or wrong. In fact, I used to curse my anxiety and my nerves. They're a great partner. I've become more of me by making them my partner. I read a book one point, and I can't remember the author. It was Hug the Monster. Hug the dark spots of yourself. And when I began to embrace it, it allowed me to overcome these things. It doesn't mean that the energy's gone away, but it means, I like to say, like a great spiritual Tai Chi master, I take the energy that is in existence, and then I form it and send it to a different direction, which is how I can be in front of a large group of people, how I can even do this right now, is it's not me. It's not Richard the man. It's what Unity would say is the Christ of me, the light of me, the Atman, the Tao, whatever you call it. It is something greater that's not of this world. And so I'm having the human experience, but I will not let it define me. Mm-hmm. That's a moment-to-moment process. I would love to say I did it once and now I'm enlightened. You know, I'm on a journey and I'll get there. Maybe I'll transcend at some point and have the ultimate answer. But we're all working together. And this paying it forward is, if I can help somebody make peace with their human self and embrace that part of themselves that maybe they have discounted or said was less than, I believe people can rise to incredible demonstrations of God on earth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm taking in everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. And just, I think we all have a negativity bias. I remember learning about and that in psychology. It was so reassuring to me, mm-hmm. that the human brain is designed to see threats and places we need to be protecting ourselves. And that's how we evolved. And so we have that negativity bias. And what I'm hearing you say is that one of the things that brings you a lot of great meaning is to help people overcome that or recognize it's there and say, get in the back seat. We're going anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Come along for the ride, but you're going to be in the back seat. You're not driving anymore.
Yeah. Fear goes in the back seat. I think that's also been said before.
I think that, somebody once told me at one point, and I wish I could tell you who it was, but it stuck with me, is that we are comparing our insides with everybody else's outsides. And when we can get vulnerable and humble and enough to just be completely honest and transparent with each other, we realize we're all having the same kinds of experiences. They may manifest in different ways, but wow, we can be human together, and in being human together, we can be even more divinely spiritual together. But that does take a great deal of vulnerability and willingness to just sit in the uncomfortableness.
Yeah, well, I feel like we could unpack all of those things deeper, but I want to move on a little bit because you've mentioned a couple times Unity and Jesus, and maybe just give us a brief education on, like, what are the core teachings of Unity that we might need to know about?
Yeah, a lot of Unity students say, oh, we have no dogma, but we do have a structure, and that structure is really important for the freedom of spiritual expression. And we have five basic Unity principles. They're very simple. Number one is there's only one presence. There's only one power. And so we differ a little bit from other Christian religions as we get rid of the devil. The devil is a man-made human construct to understand why bad things are happening. There, everywhere we look, everything we see, every experience that we are having has that beautiful essence of God right at the center. A source is always present. It cannot be absent, and except in our own mind that we believe it. And so one power, one presence, it's good, it's holy, it's sacred, it's God. And if that's the case, our second Unity principle is that everybody on the planet has that spark of divinity within them. Sometimes it's hidden, sometimes it's forgotten, sometimes it's covered up. But as a Unity student, ours is to never lose sight of the fact that there is a light there, even if the behavior is such that we don't understand it, even if it can look even violent. And this is a tough thing, because even in some of the most heinous acts of history, God was there, but God was forgotten. And this is the proverbial fall from the Garden of Eden. We believe that there was God in anything else. Well, every person, including the two of us sitting here, have that spark. It can be known by many names. The Hindus call it Atman. The Christians call it Christ. That's what we call it in Unity. I don't care what you call it. Call it Fred if you want. But there's a part of you that is untouched by the human experience. It is holy. It is sacred. And has never, ever gone away from you. And so as a created in the image and after the likeness of God, our third Unity principle is that our thoughts, this is the creative impulse. We are created as creative beings to manifest on this earth. Our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions are absolutely manifesting our reality. What's going on earth is a product, not of God or of a devil, but of us either being conscious and awake to the thoughts, the feelings, and the actions, creating heaven or creating hell which are merely states of experience. They're not destinations. They are merely states of being, states of consciousness. And so we really understand the power of our thought to manifest. You don't like the world you're seeing? Create a new thought around it. Create a new feeling and then take an action. The fourth principle is, how do we do that? That's the big thing. Is how, and this is a wonderful cross-pollination here, a cross-section with CSA, is prayer and meditation is central to what we do. Come apart. Jesus said, come apart for a while. And I always say, come apart for a while, and a while you're going to be coming apart. And so with managing my own humanness and my own anxiety, my meditation practice is essential. My time of stillness and silence and quiet and prayer is essential. And the whole unity movement is founded on that fourth principle. And then one of my favorite of the unity principles, because I have a servant's heart, is the fifth one. Out of our prayers, that place of unification with the essence of our own divine nature and the divine nature of all creation, which is in itself God, I get busy. I use this vehicle that is my body to manifest heaven for myself and for anybody that's in my field. I am the vehicle through which God walks on earth. I am the hands, the eyes, the mouth, the speech, the heart, everything through which God is made visible and tangible on earth. And so it's my responsibility and obligation to take what I have gained in prayer and act upon it. So that's kind of a drive-by of the basic five principles of unity. We go in many different directions with those, but those are the pillars and the foundation of what we teach.
I'm so grateful to learn that, because I didn't know, and they feel very true, and they feel very broad, and they feel the same as what I believe, you know, from my education with yoga and various other traditions I've looked at. So it's, I see, and I know that you do as well, and many of our listeners, you know, there's so much unity in the core teachings of all enlightenment traditions. So thank you for sharing that in a really practical way.
Thank you. We try to keep it broad, and that's on purpose. We can get very specific, but we find that the more specific we get, the more dogma and doctrine comes in, and the more somebody who might have a different thought or idea or vision cannot fit into a box. And so we try to take the box and keep it wide open so that everybody can participate. We have people that come to Unity of 10 different faiths. I have Jews that come here. I have Christians. I have Buddhists. I have Muslims. I have atheists and agnostics that all find that using the thought, the feeling, those principles, we can make the world a better place. It doesn't really matter what path we're following, but follow the path that makes you kinder. Follow the path that makes you more compassionate and generous. And we're all doing it. The water then lifts in the harbor for all the boats, not just our boat. And so it's very intentional that it is a broad paintbrush.
Roy wrote in Absolute Knowledge That Liberates Consciousness, one of my favorite books he wrote, there's only one spiritual path, awakening to complete enlightenment.
There you go.
How you get there, you know, there's different flavors of ice cream, but we're all on the same path. Well, let me maybe change gears just a little bit, because I wanted to ask you a little bit about when you came to Unity. I had heard that there was kind of some transformation in the congregation, and that was a challenge you went through. I'd love to just hear, if you're willing to share about that story, what you learned from it and how it affected you.
Well, it's going to bring up a little bit of not just an individual, me, being brought to my knees, but a congregation of people. I was here at Unity North. I was familiar with Unity long before I got to this community, and it really connected in a relationship with New Thought. And if you set a direction, here's what I know, as an individual or a collective, that you want to grow. You want to become closer to God. You want to become closer to your divine self, or you want to be enlightened, to use that word. Well, the universe is going to bring you the teachers. And sometimes the teachers look like wise sages that you sit at their feet. And sometimes your teachers look like difficult circumstances, difficult moments where we have to come face to face with our human self, that which is out of congruity with the spiritual truth. We have to have a cleansing process. And at Unity North, I happen to be here working musically. I do a lot of music, and I was working with the youth at the time. And our church went through a very difficult time of being completely immersed in the world. people are people. And in churches, sometimes people can be even more people-like because they care so much. They're something they really care about, they're passionate about, and their personality drove this particular ministry here at Unity North to a very dark place, a very divisive, dualistic place, which was out of integrity with what we teach and what we're about. And it was on full display for us to see. The congregation split in 5 different directions. And I just happened to be the last person standing. And I said, no, I can't do this job. It's not mine to do. I'm a piano player. I'm a singer. And I said no 4 times. And on the 5th time, something was revealed to me. Your teacher has shown up. Your experience that will be your greatest graduate course in understanding divinity, yours and the divinity of others, even including those that were maybe on the other side of a table in a conversation or an argument, really. God placed in my heart, give him a yes. I will put in your way the people you need. I will put the humility that you're going to need to learn these lessons and integrate them into your heart. And so this church was literally days away from bankruptcy. I was left literally with $12 in the bank and a $23,000 a month mortgage. And you think, well, that's not a spiritual problem. Oh, it was a spiritual problem that got us there, and it was going to be a spiritual solution that got us out of that. And so we began to implement our core values, the things that are most important to us. I began to have to dig to the depth of my core values of what was important, and my spiritual, limited really at that point, spiritual understanding. And it went to a deeper, more expansive place, knowing God's more powerful than human circumstance. That the spirit, that divine essence, is more powerful than anything the world can throw at you. And the teacher itself was ugly. I don't make apologies for saying that. It was ugly and it was painful. It was difficult. And there's still scars, you know, humanly from that. But let me tell you, the blossoming that happened as a result of being willing to stand in the fire of human behavior, my own included, to stand in the fire, I felt I was refined and this community was refined, because those who could stand in the fire and really hold fast to the spiritual realities that we taught thrived. And we are, as a church, and I would love to say I did it, I got to hold the wheel, but it was a collection of people who turned inward, turned away from the outside judgment, turned away from the outside effects of what was going on, and lived in the realm of cause. And we got real quiet. Several prayer vigils, 24-hour prayer vigils, became an integral part of what we did, where we shut up and we started listening. We started breathing and started talking less. And the universe will always respond to that. So I really consider this particular, and that's a kind of a drive-by of this difficult situation. But it was probably the most painful thing I ever went through and the most beautiful becoming. That I ever experienced in really relying and giving my life over to something far greater than my earthly walk.
That sounds fascinating and painful, as you said, but then I love how you gave the words to it of standing in the fire. You got purified and refined, and as did everyone else involved in the process. So that's encouraging for our listeners if they're going through something. Or I also liked how you said no 4 times, and then you're like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do next, yeah. Even though I'm scared.
I look at some of the reluctant prophets that are my teachers, Moses, Jeremiah, Isaiah. They all said, no, not mine. I can't do this. But they all ended up doing wonderful things. And I've learned that with God, all things are possible. With that divine essence of light and love, and anything is possible. And so that which was a limit to me got overcame, overcome. And I have to be careful, because it'd be really easy for my ego to take credit for this great becoming. My ego and my personality just had to get out of the way so that something more beautiful and profound could take over. And that's really my spiritual practice. We can put doctrine and dogma and words and principles on it, but the reality, it's getting myself out of the way so that the universe can do what the universe does, and that's to love more fully, love more presently, readily, passionately, and then love will take care of business and clear the way.
Love will take care of business. I want a bumper sticker with that on it. I love that. I think I'll put that on my out of office message at work. Love will take care of business.
I wonder how my board of directors would say if I put love's taking care of business today, I'm on vacation.
I'm at the beach. I love that. Well, you've kind of led into another question I had in mind for you, which is you mentioned that your spiritual practice is getting your ego out of the way. Talk about any other habits or actual practices that you do. You mentioned meditation and prayer as an essential mm-hmm. part of your well-being, your ability to serve. What else helps you stay anchored and helps you remember what you really are?
Yeah, that's a good question. What came to mind immediately was we become like the people we surround ourselves with. And so really community is essential. I'm a community builder. That's one of my skills. And I realized that like-minded people will be magnetized to you. If you can hold that vibration, you're going to be able to see and hear and attract to yourself people who are also seeking something greater than the human experience. And so I surround myself with smarter people than me, with more connected people than me. I have no problem putting my ears on and listening to somebody who is saying something profound. And the more I do that, the quieter I get, the more willing I get, the more people that come around me. And then there's a strengthening. There's power in numbers, if you will, but there's power in consciousness. And when numbers and consciousness come together, doing things like prayer, meditation, silence, stillness, just breathing together, or simply claiming and affirming truth together in prayer, something magical happens. There's an exponential increase to the possibility that's in the environment. And so it's all those things. Music has always been my go-to. I laugh and I say the piano is my greatest therapist. The piano is my greatest minister. When I can sit down and create community with other musicians that are there for the sole purpose of creating more beauty on the earth, something happens. The troubles melt away. The difficulties melt away and they become hangnails. Not the end of the world, but simply hangnails. And so really, I'm very intentional about surrounding myself with people who have a mindset of peace, people who understand the importance of the breath between the words, the importance of leaning into the light and finding the light, digging through to find the light when nobody else can find it, seeing the good when nobody else can find it. And it's infectious. You know, you become like those people and they become like you. And really, it's that practical. It really is a practical approach, but it creates really beautiful music on the planet.
I love everything you just said. And I think my husband's a musician too. And he often talks about how important the silence is in music. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to have pauses and the same with breathing, right? We have to have those pauses in between the inhale and the exhale. And I love what you said about listening, you know, and bringing and attracting the people into your life. It sounds like you've learned to be spirit led with this. I can tell.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I'd love to say that it was an easy road. Like I said at the beginning, I fought it a little bit. My human self has fought it. But the less I fight it, the more beautiful it gets. And I love the music analogy. I love directing choirs. And you can teach choirs that maybe don't have the best voices. But if you teach them to listen to the music that's happening in the rests, that's where the music happens. The overtones, the ring of the music, that open spaciousness, the music becomes more beautiful. And my piano teacher taught me that. That was my first teacher, because I love big romantic pieces, Beethoven and Rachmaninoff. I love to play those pieces. And she said, why don't you slow down and look that Rachmaninoff created a space there for a divine purpose. And it's like, oh, yeah, she was my first minister, whether I recognized it or not. But there's music happening in the rests of life, in the midst of Beethoven. And that's where actually the real beauty happens. And then that which is you're engaged in becomes even more beautiful. So the choir sings more beautifully, even with less than perfect voices, because they've took that moment to listen first. And I used to tell my choirs, still do to this day, there's only one voice, and it's God's voice. And so if we can sing from that place, even the least trained voices can sound like a choir of angels. I believe that's the same in community and in life. The more listening there is going on, the more beautiful the community experience will be.
This listening idea, I have a feeling how you're going to answer this question. I've thought about asking you this because, again, just from watching your videos, listening to a couple of your recordings, I get, and now I feel this more, you know, it seems you're a very creative person, and I'm guessing you have a lot of ideas. And you're, I checked out the Unity North website. I mean, this church is super active. You have activities every day of the week for all ages. And so I wanted to note really personally for myself, when you have what feels like a great idea, if you have a lot of them, how do you help figure out what do I need to take action on and what's just an idea that needs to go in the backseat?
You're right. I appreciate you recognizing my mind is a very busy place. You know, and it's very active and very creative. And I love that part of myself. A practice that I use, and I use the word, take it to headquarters. When an idea hits the altar of my mind, a possibility, because I'm all about the realm of possibility. Everything that ever has been created in my life or in the world started as a divine idea. Somebody had to have the idea, which is why there's two creation stories in the Bible. It's first created here, then it's created here. And everything has a timing. And so I take it to headquarters, which means for me, drop down into my heart. In this busy world, in this crazy sanctuary of my creative mind, I better drop down here before I start getting busy. And that's, again, our process. So we have a prayer process in Unity, and it's silence. And silence is not the absence of thought. You're still going to have the thought going by, but it's the awareness that God's making this decision. Something greater than me is making, and that's at the level of the heart. And if I cannot get down to the level of the heart with whatever thought is crossing my mind, it's probably not something that wants to happen yet. And I get very impatient. I'll be honest. I can get really impatient. But I want this so bad. It's such a great idea. And every single time, if I follow the guidance of dropping down to headquarters, the idea may not manifest this year, but then next year, it's the right timing. And I say, thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Presence, doing business as the ability to pay attention to everything has a season and a reason and a timing. And so, yeah, it's a very busy place. And I've learned to have a nice big drawer here at my desk to go, God will let me know when I open that, when that drawer needs to be opened here and opened there. And I wonder if I surround myself with people. I'll be honest, I have a right brain kind of guy. Let's just create, and I can create chaos better than anybody. I'm really grateful for the like-minded people who are on the left brain who say, have you thought about this? Sometimes God speaks through the left brain of my organization. Have you thought this through completely? Oh, no, I haven't. Thank you.
Oh, I'm laughing. I love that. I love take it to headquarters, which is really heart quarters. Take it to heart quarters, because I feel like we have that in common. I have many ideas, most of which don't need to be acted on. And so I really love that you shared that. I was waiting for the right guest on the podcast to ask that question, and you were the one. Thank you.
Well, but sometimes ideas are stepping stones. That idea is never going to be manifest, but it was a stepping stone to a better idea, to another. And so you can trace back, wow, it was an original thought that never is going to be manifest because it was just not meant to be, but it led you to the awareness and the ability to have the consciousness and the heart consciousness to be able to manifest it.
Yes. And sometimes it's just a butterfly flying across, just a pretty thought to look at and nothing that needs to be done with it. Well, there's so many great things we could keep talking on, but I'm going to move on a little bit. Because in some of the recordings, I heard you mention your children several times. And in your bio that you sent to me, you said you had this dream of being a grandpa. So I'm guessing it's really important to you. Share with us how that's been important in your life.
No, I appreciate you asking that question. People used to ask me when I was a child, you know, even in the midst of my difficult troubles, my safe spot was my grandfather. And people would ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, we start asking kids those questions when they're 3 years old. It was in my family, what are you going to do? You better have a direction for your life. And I never knew what it was I wanted to do. There was not a calling to a career path or an education path, but there was a calling to be like my grandfather. In my anxiety, in my tension, my grandfather was the altar I would go to. I was fortunate enough to grow up on a 40-acre ranch that my grandparents homesteaded in 1914. And so I lived just across the field from my grandparents. And where I wanted to go to feel safe, to feel joy, to feel happy, was to sit at my with my grandfather, who was quite a humorist. He found light and love in life long before I ever knew about Unity. And I would go spend time with him. He made the world a better place just by his being. And so I would answer the question, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to be a grandfather like that. I knew that my calling would be have a grandfatherly presence, a safe place where I could bring joy to people's lives, where I could, and my grandfather really appreciated my ability to play the piano. So he'd always ask me to go play at this little electric organ he had, and he'd sit back and he'd bask. And so I created joy for him through the music. He created it for me in just being a funny man. He gave me that exhale. In my life, he was an exhale. And I said, I want to be like that when I grow up. And so I'm a manifester. I want to be a grandpa. And I have no biological children, but I've been able to have 17 grandchildren. I have a brand new great grandchild. I started very young on this journey of manifestation. And I've been very blessed to take some of the things that I believe in the most loving, beautiful, fun ways. Pass them on to my grandchildren and to see that they're just doing amazing things, maybe not called ministry, but they're passing forward some a gift that I gave them, however small it might have been, to the world. And I think I really feel like a grandfather in ministry. Raising kids, I've raised many foster children. My wife and I have had hundreds of foster children, and I see it as a paying forward of what I received from the people who saw me maybe as broken. An anxious young man who had a lot of trouble, who pulled me out of those experiences and gave me a sense of joy and purpose in life. I really have claimed that purpose as my own, and I paid it forward to foster kids, grandkids, kids, and to anybody who's willing to sit and listen to me call out what I see in them. God has given me the unique ability to see good when nobody else can see it, especially the person who's sitting in front of me. So I feel like I've got a grandpa energy, and that my grandpa Buck, Carl Buck, lives in me at such a degree that I'm able to not take life so seriously as I used to, but to create a little bit of joy and to create a space for children. And we're all kids on this journey, learning and waking up in our own way. That's become part of my mission and part of my ministry.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And what do your grandkids call you?
Gramps.
Gramps. Okay.
Gramps.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but one of them, and it took off for a while. One of them called me My Little Grampsy. My Little Grampsy, and a couple of them took that on, and to this day, that's my greatest title. It's not minister. It is
Yeah.
My Little Grampsy, my little safe place, where they can come and have somebody wrap their arms around them and feel safe, maybe for the first time all day long.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing. I felt there was a story there. Thanks for bringing that out. Well, I feel like I would love to just chat with you indefinitely, and well, maybe we can do it again. But in the meantime, is there anything else you'd like to just share with our audience?
I'm honored to be asked to speak in this environment. I'm humbled by it, but I take this as bridge building, and then what you're doing, Joan, and what CSA is doing, and Michael Gadway is doing, where I really enjoyed getting to know him, and we're going to be doing a retreat at CSA very soon. A sense of oneness with all creation is only going to happen. The peace on earth that I seek and that I desire and I know is possible is only going to be happening with people like you who are willing to extend a hand and say, let me talk to this guy who maybe doesn't fit into the box of my podcast, but we're going to build a bridge together. And I think when enough of the leaders in religious movements, spiritual movements, or just spiritual practice begin to open up their heart and expand a little bit and share in venues like this. I have hope that we're going to get back to the garden, and that fallen consciousness is being healed, it's being mended one bridge at a time.
Thank you for saying that so beautifully. And actually, we really the name why we renamed the podcast Spirit Led is to open that box so we could really broaden, because there's amazing truth and amazing leaders and inspiration in many different flavors, right? Not just vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, well, we all have a piece of the puzzle. You've got a piece of a puzzle that I will never know unless I sit and we build a bridge here. I might have a little piece of a puzzle, and when those pieces come together, hey, the complete picture begins to take form. And so that really is my final counsel. Don't play small. You're going to give no's to the world, but the universe is going to ask you for a yes. Be willing to listen for the yes and to know that God will provide whatever it takes to be a bridge builder, to be a mender, be a healer, to be part of the movement back home, because we're all just walking each other home, as Ram Dass says.
I love it. And my habit has become to ask my guests to close the podcast with a prayer, just gave us some words of wisdom, an affirmation, or a song. So you mentioned we might be able to add a song at the end. So if we do that, could you tell the audience about it?
Chanting is one of my spiritual practices. The one that comes to mind based on my last thought was, there is no you, there is no me, there's only God that I can see. And there is no us, and there is no them, there's only God. Amen. Amen. That's a mantra that I use and I chant. It's a chant that I wrote. What happens with chanting is you're singing the chant. And after about 3, 4, 5, 10 minutes, the chant begins to sing you. And then the vibration of those truths and those words begin to live in you.
Well, I think just it's been such a pleasure. This time actually flew by. It was so delightful to get to know you a little bit better, Richard, and just thank you for sharing your energy and your consciousness with us.
Well, and thank you for sharing. I did a lot of talking here. Let's do this again, and then I'll put my ears on and I'll interview you, because I know that there's a wealth of goodness that you bring. Associating with Michael Gadway has just been one of the greatest blessings of my last year or two. And so, in meeting you, I count it as among a blessing here today, and I hope that it's a blessing that we get to continue.
Thank you for tuning in to the Spirit-Led Podcast. Special thanks to our producer, Monty Craig. Please subscribe to catch upcoming episodes. For support in your awakening journey, visit our sponsor, the Center for Spiritual Awareness, at csa-davis.org. We offer online group meditations, classes, and in-person retreats at our headquarters in Lakemont, Georgia. Once again, that's csa-davis.org. Until next time, remember your pure essence of being, an eternal relationship with the infinite.